Hey, party people, it's your girl Amorwa, and you're listening to Radio Perg on CFRU 93.3 FM. Today's episode is a continuation of the amazing series that Kareem, one of our People's History Project researchers, has been conducting on music and activism. But before we get into that, I do have a couple of announcements. Oper Guelph invites you to the Ecological and Heritage Walking Tour. So these have been happening all summer, and it's such a cool opportunity to embark on a fascinating exploration of Guelph's natural and cultural heritage as we delve into the stories and significance of the Speed River while walking along the Royal Recreational Trail. Led by knowledgeable guides, this tour will give you an insight of the histories and ecological life that define our community. Come along to enjoy stories of historical significance and cultural heritage sites along the banks and have opportunities to observe local wildlife in their natural habitat. Learn how the community has affected the river through the years. So I believe these are tours that are taking place on Tuesdays and Sundays. You can visit our Eventbrite in order to register. It's completely free. You just got to RSVP first. Folks are meeting at the Boathouse to start, which is on 116 Gordon Street. But yeah, I hear such good things. It's tons of fun. Apparently, Oper used to do these back in the day, and we're bringing them back thanks to Canada Summer Jobs. So yeah, we're really excited to be hosting these this summer. And I hope to see folks out there. I've been pretty busy, but I'm hoping to get an opportunity to go to one myself. So yeah. If you are looking for ways to donate, the Helper Bees are starting back up the backpack program for this coming school year. So you have the opportunity to help 10 young boys and girls, 10 young students get started at their new schools. They are accepting cash, check, and e-transfer donations at donations@apostlesguelph.org with the tagline backpacks, as well as material donations such as school supplies, coats, and shoes. For more information, you can contact helperbees@apostlesguelph.org for further questions. So, also happening this weekend, we're really excited, presented by the Queen Company and Feminist Events by Siobhan, is the first ever BIPOC market taking place at the Guelph's Farmers Market. So, from Sunday, July 28th, from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Guelph's Farmers Market, you can find some really amazing vendors, all of whom are racialized and just really love what they do. And you can go buy amazing stuff from them. So be sure to go check it out. I believe there's going to be some performers as well. But yeah, it should be a really, really great time. It's from 12 to 4 p.m. at the Farmers Market. Operg is super excited to sponsor it. And yeah, we always love supporting the community in this way. So if there are other ways that we can support, definitely let us know. Really looking forward to this BIPOC market. We hope to see folks out there. And if you can't make it out to this Sunday, you can catch the next one that is planned for Sunday, August 11th. So yeah, don't miss out. And it looks like there's going to be a couple of amazing events happening in August too. So join Guelph for Palestine for a summer festival celebrating Palestinian arts, culture, and communities in our region. It's going to be August 10th at the Boathouse, 116 Gordon Street in Guelph. They will be gathering where the two rivers meet for an evening of family-friendly activities. They will be having workshops on Dubke and Saturdays, performances, snacks, and refreshments. They'll also be hosting an arts market in collaboration with Feminist Events of Palestinian Allied Artists. And there will be a kids zone with kite making workshops, as well as many drop-in activities coordinated by the Guelph Teachers for Palestine. This will be followed by a series of short films presented by the Deeply Rooted film series. And this festival will take place outdoors at the Boathouse from 5 to 9 p.m. on Saturday, August 10th. Save the date and stay tuned for event details and signups. Also happening that Sunday, August 11th, Justice for Workers is having their third annual Justice for Workers picnic. The topic is going to be What Will It Take to Win? But join them at the Royal City Park gazebo, August 11th, rain or shine, to enjoy good food and discuss how you can win the fight for decent work and a caring society. All are welcome, and please bring something to share. The poster says it's from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., so yeah, hope to see folks out there.
Hi, I'm Kareem Mosna. I'm a People's History Project researcher working with Olpert Guelph. The People's History Project shares perspectives and firsthand accounts that relate to local social and environmental justice movements. The focus of my research is to examine the role of local music and related arts in activist efforts. Through this Radio Purge series on CFRU 93.3 FM, I am presenting a series of interviews that connect local music with broader social movements. Well, on this episode of Radio Purge, well, to longtime Guelphites, my guest this week really needs no introduction. As a singer-songwriter, first as a member of the group Tamarack, whose repertoire includes Frobisher Bay, which has been performed by choirs worldwide, as well as the widely covered Mining for Gold. Then as a solo musician and playwright, took a closer look at environmental and social justice issues, including with the Emergency Climate Change musical and Stephen Harper the musical, or How to Survive and Thrive in the Dying Days of the Empire of Oil. He has also served as a city councillor here in Guelph. James Gordon joins me now on Radio Perk. James, thanks so much for coming by.
Thanks for having me. I'm exhausted just listening to that intro, though, really.
And I was just skimming the surface,
really. All right, there we go.
So really, I always like to begin when I do interviews is talk to me about sort of the start of your journey in either music or activism, or perhaps, well, which came first?
Music came first, and actually I was thinking of this as I was coming in. I think music drifted me into activism for a reason that you might not be that obvious. As a youngster just starting out playing music, if there was some rally or protest or some event going on, they'd say, hey, we could use some music. Can you play a couple tunes for us? And then I'd go to the event and I'd go, oh, well, geez, they could use a song about this. And then you sort of get sucked in bit by bit so that after a while the lines blur. Okay, I'm taking part in this out of my concern as a citizen, not as a musician. And then you sort of end up doing both. So, and then now they're pretty inextricably connected, the two things, I think.
Could you give me, is there a specific memory that sticks out in your mind of one of those experiences?
Yeah, I think, going back, I was really young in the 70s. I remember when the leader of the provincial NDP at that time was Stephen Lewis, and a great, great man. And he was coming to town to do a little rally, and they asked me if I'd, you know, just as I said, play a couple tunes. So I wrote a really, really stupid tune called It's Stephen We Believe In. but of course, you do it in the moment, and everybody appreciates it. And then I connected with Stephen, and I thought, okay, well, there maybe is something, there is some value here, even though this was just a toss-off thing. It's a way of connecting art and politics and finding ways. I always think as an activist, if you can't have fun, why would you do it, right? So introducing that element too has been really important.
So you mentioned earlier that music and activism are inextricably connected. And do you feel that that's become more so the case as time has gone on?
For me, this might sound strange too, but I wish I could see that more generally in the music industry, and I don't. So, and I'm not sure, I think that has to do with the corporatization of music, probably. But there was a time when I was starting out when it was just natural. If you had a voice, you used it to raise concerns for your community and for your species. And it just doesn't happen as obviously now.
There is a quote from Nina Simone. I don't have it exactly in front of me, but it's a paraphrase that it's essentially the artist's responsibility to reflect what is going on in the world.
I think so. And I always look at my... how do I approach my art, my work? I often think of myself as being a mirror. So you might not care that much about me if I'm singing a song about me, But if I've found something that reflects back my own experience in a way that resonates with you, then you're using that responsibility that Nina Simone mentioned, but you're also making a connection. And connection is all important to me. It's why I still do this at my decrepit old age. And I think it's creating community. As long as, like, when you make connections through music, through art, it helps to build community, and that's what I'm all about.
The group Tamarack, was there that shared enthusiasm?
We had a different kind of a mandate. In fact, most of my work that was towards the political activist side existed outside the group. Although we had our approach was I was in the band for 20 years to really capture the essence of the Canadian experience, whether that's about our landscape, our heritage, the diversity of our culture, and because we sort of alluded to it already in our conversation, that there are stories that just had either been lost or hadn't been told. And if we can learn our own stories and retell them and appreciate them, I think that builds community as well. So that was kind of our angle with it. And it was more nonpartisan, but I suppose it had its impact in that regard too.
Just having that shared knowledge and sense of identity, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, in your solo work, you branched beyond just simply performing music and writing songs. Mm-hmm. You brought it into more musicals and even operas, in a sense. Tell me about why you branched out into that.
A couple reasons. I found, and you would already know this, the musical genre that I'm involved in is pretty obscure, really, in that I'm singer-songwriter, tend towards the folky side of things, roots. And it thrives within its own scene, but it's not a big scene. And when I have a message that I want to get out there or something I want to share with different demographic of people, I want to find ways to reach outside that scene that they all know me already. And that's where I sort of branched into musical theater, because it brings out a totally different audience. And it also is a real focus for, I think I started to do what you would almost, the simple version would be like song cycles. Okay, here's 10 songs that seem to belong together about a certain theme. But then if the songs start to have a thread to them, a bit of a plot, then you have a bigger canvas to work with as a creative.
I was able to find a few clips of the Stephen Harper musical.
Oh, yeah.
Where you've got
a puppet,
a Harper puppet.
Yeah.
How was that received?
Oh, well, actually, I can think of one story right away with that. I was almost hauled off an airplane when they checked my baggage, and I had this giant dead prime minister in a suitcase.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Stephen Harper puppet. But I think people appreciated just the visual of it and the prop, and I made it fun that way. And although you're talking about that Stephen Harper, the musical, I never guessed this, but I had people walk out of the show regularly because they thought, oh, that must be sort of a tribute to tribute to Stephen Harper, and they'd go and go, whoops, I guess not. And off they'd go.
And I just wonder, sort of using that approach of you know, the again, making it fun in that sense.
Sure.
A bit of satire. Does what, how do you feel is the role of that in drawing attention to very real societal issues?
Well, I learned early on that, you know, you could dive into serious issues. If you can flip them around a little bit in how you are a mirror, use humor, use sarcasm, you have to find ways in for people's attentions. Like, am I going to invest my time and listening to this dude, you know? And then, so find the little triggers, little prompts that keep them involved. And that's where I've always found it, using humor and just narrative and stories really helps. Because, and I learned in my career as a politician, 8 years on city council, that people sure get more involved in an issue if you sing them a song than if you give them a speech. Yeah. That's my experience. Maybe I was just not a good speech giver, but you go, oh, a speech, and you tend to gloss it over. But if you can amplify a speech, give the same message with a song or with any form of artistic expression, I think it resonates more, which is why I think we should be using those tools more.
Fascinating how you had both the side of politics,
yes,
and the side of art.
Yeah.
Did they work well together,
yeah,
having both?
Yeah. I'll tell you, it was actually Jack Layton who, yeah, talked me into running for politics in the first place. Got to know him just by supporting him. And he was a musician too, right? So if he came to...
Right.
And
yes,
he'd always bring a cardboard box full of songbooks when he was on the road too, for sharing with the press and everything. So he said, James, it's kind of the same gig. He said, you have to both performers, well, politicians have to be performers, but you have to be a listener. You have to find ways to connect with people. You have to care. and you probably have to have a sense of purpose or a vision. And he said, so you've got all those in what you're doing already with your music, so take it up a notch. And then I actually was ganged up on. Do you know Charlie Angus?
He's
a NDP federal member of parliament.
Right.
But he was a punk musician, and he's done a great job as a politician. He's just retiring from it this year. I think he's going to go back to music full time. But yeah, he, right after Jack called, he called too, and he said, yeah, James, I think you could do this. And they were right, essentially, in that I think it, I was able to shift gears into that mode more readily than some people would that didn't have that background.
Looking more specifically at some of the themes, there's a song, I believe it was part of the Stephen Harper musical, or it might have been the Climate musical. Uh-huh. The system isn't broken,
oh, yeah,
it was made that way.
Yeah.
Or was that part of both?
I think I used it in both.
It was,
yeah,
used in both.
Yeah.
What were you sort of seeing at the time that when you wrote that song?
Well, I think it came out of an extra level of cynicism, and noticing you probably hear this all the time from people who are concerned about saying, well, it's all messed up.
Yeah.
We got to fix this. However, if you take a step back and go, well, it's messed up on purpose. If the system, the theory behind the system isn't broken, it was made that way. We live in a extreme late stage capitalist system that was designed to exclude people like you and I, I think.
Okay.
So that means it was designed to be ineffective for anyone but the 1%. So that doesn't mean it's broken. It was built on purpose that way. So I think it's important to get that perspective. So I think that's where that song came from.
Well, it wasn't made for you. It wasn't made for me.
Wasn't made for me.
It was made for who?
Made for who?
Is at the top of the heap. Well, now listen to me.
Listen.
When I say the system isn't broken, it was made that way. The system isn't broken, it was made that way. Well, now it isn't fair. It's not supposed to be.
Not supposed to be.
'Cause they don't care.
They don't care.
And can't you see? Well,
say. The system isn't broken, it was made that way. The system isn't broken, it was made that way. Well, you think our social fabric has been torn. It was ripped right from the start. From that sorry day that you were born. It was meant to keep us and them apart. System isn't wrecked,
isn't wrecked,
'cause it was meant,
it was meant
to protect,
to protect
the 1%. Well, now listen to me,
listen
when I say the system isn't broken, it was made that way. The system isn't broken, it was made that way.
System isn't broken, it was made that way.
The system isn't broken, it was made that way. Well, it was built to last,
built to last,
by the upper class,
by the upper class.
Built on greed,
built on greed,
not democracy,
not democracy.
It wasn't made for you,
wasn't made for you,
and it wasn't made for me,
wasn't made for me.
It wasn't made for you,
wasn't made for you.
It wasn't even made for me,
wasn't made for me.
It wasn't, it wasn't, it wasn't, it wasn't, it wasn't made,
it wasn't made,
it wasn't made,
it wasn't made,
it wasn't made for you,
it wasn't made for me.
It wasn't, it wasn't, it wasn't, it wasn't, it wasn't made for you.
Singer-songwriter, playwright, author, and activist James Gordon with The System Isn't Broken, It Was Made That Way. That comes from the Heritage Hall Sessions album. James Gordon is my guest today here on Radio Perg from CFRU 93.3 FM. We continue speaking more about how his songs reflect broader social and ecological movements and how they connect with an audience.
I think another goal that I have is to make sure that anyone listening that's taken the trouble to listen to what I have to offer is engaged enough that they might feel that they can do something about it too. And another similarity between my career as an artist and as a politician is that I think it's always been really important to me to relay to people that their voices matter, right? And that's why my music with Tamarack and my solo music often is story-based. I take people's stories and I flip them back to them. And in politics, you're not going to even vote if you don't think that your voice makes any difference. And that's why, what was the last, I think the provincial election was 30% something?
It was definitely below 50.
Yeah, yeah. So those more than 50%, people go, well, why should I bother to vote? Because it's all pre-planned, it doesn't make a difference. And what I keep, the windmill I keep tilting at for that, is that when people say, well, why vote? It's the same people that get in every time. The simple answer to that is, it's the same people voting every time.
Yeah.
Right? So your voice can matter. I used to come up here to the campus when I was running for office and say, even municipally, say to students, you could elect a mayor. You could run a student as a mayoral candidate, and that student would win if you all voted for that
right
person, because that's more votes. You have more votes here than even bothered to vote in the whole city, right?
Interesting. So a big part of of what you do as well is just enabling and empowering people to actually use that right to make a difference.
Yeah. And I don't think it has to be real. Mm-hmm. It used to drive me bananas on city council where you'd see, they're stressed out, they're overwhelmed, the staff, but so much activity of public engagement was literally, okay, we can check off a box and say, we did public engagement, we're listening to you. However, the next step is to actually notice the difference that, hey, we spoke up as citizens and here's the result. So shifting that, the sincerity part is that your voice won't matter, or you won't think your voice matters until you can see that you are heard. In fact, I have a song called You Want to Feel Heard. I feel that we all have one thing in common. In the song actually, it says we want to feel held and we want to feel heard. We all want that, even the far right and the far left. We all want that, and we deserve that too.
Basic,
so we have to find
need.
Ways to make that happen. Yeah.
Standing on the corner of pain and Maine, blown by the wind, soaked by the rain, listen to the whistle of the midnight train, singing that same old sad refrain.
And one.
Down at the drop and scraping up a meal, back by the tracks trying to make a deal. Dude in black tells you to kneel, boots kick the dust, there's a flash of steel. Sirens wail, tires squeal, you're left with a hurt that'll never heal. This is your life, raw and real, leaves you with nothing left to feel. You wanna feel hell. You wanna feel heard, you wanna feel safe and reassured. You wish you could be loved unconditionally. You wanna feel heard, and you wanna feel heard. High up in his golden tower, looking down a mean man glowers, those who oppose him are devoured. He could crush you like you were a flower. He's got all the money, he's got all the power, so why is he looking so sad and sour? After all, he's the man of the hour. He's got a heart still beats like ours. He just wants to feel hell, he wants to feel hurt, he wants to feel safe and reassured. He wishes he could be loved unconditionally. He wants to feel held, and he wants to feel heard. Rich man, poor woman, beggar man, thief, poet, priestess, pauper or king, somehow deep down underneath, we all want the same thing. Blown by the wind, soaked by the rain, listen to the whistle of the midnight train.
James Gordon from Radio Purg on CFRU 93.3 FM. That's called You Want to Feel Heard. My name's Kareem Mosna, and now more of my conversation with James Gordon. Of course, we have to talk a bit about the Emergency Climate Musical.
Sure.
And I mean, you know, that and of course some of your other music as well touches on those themes. A climate emergency. I mean, there's always been, depending on the community, some are saying climate crisis, some are saying climate emergency. Right. I believe in Guelph, we're still saying crisis.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on the term emergency climate musical?
Yes. I actually, it was an inside joke, that name, because as a counselor, I brought forward the motion to declare Guelph to be having a climate emergency. The motion, believe it or not, failed because some of the more right-wing counselors, climate change deniers, thought, oh, well, that will just scare people. We can't say it's emergency. Somehow they thought crisis was a downgrade. I don't get it. Huh. So the motion passed unanimously once we changed the word to crisis. And Greta Thunberg is quite right in that we have to behave as if our house is on fire. Where I differ from Greta is that, yeah, you need to scare people into action, but they won't take action if they think their house is burning down anyway. Like, we have to look for solutions. There has to be something that we can put our energies into. Otherwise, we'll all just give up. And why would we spend time trying to mitigate the damage that capitalism has placed on our planet if we think it's doomed anyway?
Right. So there's sort of that battle between, yes, draw attention to the issue, but also there's also sometimes the challenge of people feeling like, well, it's too late anyway, we can't do anything. So it's a sense of throwing your hands up.
Yeah. Hmm. So the name emergency is a really appropriate one to me, I think. And there's the show, I was touring with it. It got interrupted by COVID and I moved it online. And actually that worked really well because I did a whole virtual tour, like each a different town's the equivalent of Oprah in each town would sponsor it. And we'd have that. But when we did it live, the most rewarding thing to me was that, especially if young people came out to it, and we might get into it later, but that was my door into getting a different demographic because I'm pretty old, so my audience is usually pretty old. So, but a play in that context drew younger people out. Quite a few times I did the show and they wouldn't go home. They needed to talk, right? Which is my biggest reward. Okay, they would literally come up onto the stage after. And I remember once there was a whole group that just, when I did my final bow and thanks, went off stage, came back on, and the stage was occupied by young people who just were affected enough that they wanted to keep the conversation going. So that was my whole goal, is to create the context for more conversation. So that felt like maybe I was doing something.
And opening up that conversation, I'm just thinking about a group, Carbon Conversations, that just ran with the Guelph Climate Action Network. And again, it's having that conversation, that shared sense of the issue.
And I think I'm really kind of proud of those conversations. I've been involved in that. If we can't talk about something just person to person, we're never going to find a way forward either. And it means that you don't feel alone with it either. So that's why it's essential to combine your sense of community with your sense of social justice, I think.
There was a lyric in one of your songs. You talked about, here comes an actual journalist. I believe that was part of the climate musical.
And
I had to ask you about that. And I guess that comes down to, I mean, there's so much information and, you know, sometimes there's a sense of what's the truth with all that's coming at us all the time.
Right? Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that the illusion there was that it, in the internet age, it's so hard to filter out what's actually going on. I don't know how people do it. I struggle with it. And how do you find those filters and understand which news sources to go to or who you can trust. And it's impossible.
Crybaby's Caravan.
Oh, gee.
Yes, that certainly got a lot of attention.
Oh, yeah.
when viral. Again, sort of any thoughts on sort of how do I put it? Like the sense of drawing attention to that issue, but still, with so much on both sides
of
that. Yeah. How do you tackle something like
well,
that?
Well, I have to admit, I was pretty naive going into that whole thing. The song was just a tongue-in-cheek, humorous take on what the truckers' convoy was doing. And I think it's a perfect example of what you were asking about before, where the use of humor and sarcasm or whatever. If I had just made a statement saying that truckers' convoy, that's really bad news, who cares if I said that? But the song generated interest. I think I made it fun, so people engaged with it. But the naive part is I never realized how sensitive that movement, where I got death threats. I was actually can you imagine getting a phone call from the police about a song? Because the police called me and basically offered protection. They said, what do you need? And they said, and they were monitoring, they had seen something or someone passed something, monitoring my social media. And they said, you got to take those things seriously, that I was being threatened quite regularly. But the risk, I think, was worth it, because obviously I touched a nerve with the truckers' convoy supporters who took offense to my critique of them. But it galvanized, especially in Ottawa, the song almost became a rallying cry for all those besieged businesses and citizens too. So.
And I imagine that is a major challenge for anyone speaking out or taking a side. It seems more so than ever with what's going on in our world. But are there any other major challenges you would say, or maybe more to expand on just the issue of taking a side, speaking, sharing a view? And
well, it's a matter of safety, and it's a really good point that I need to learn more about. But earlier in this interview, I said I wish that more people stuck their necks out as artists and got more political or more into activism, but not if you're going to get death threats from it. So how do you find a way to do that work where you still feel safe? And I don't know the answer to that, although it does, like I had, I after that song broke, I was doing it in my live shows, people would walk out in that song too. And at first, oh, geez, I guess I shouldn't have sung that. And I thought, well, good. I need people to understand what's happening. And if they walked out because they were offended, it's because they saw something in what I said that resonated with them, I think.
It's still connected.
Yeah, that's right.
Of course, another battle for anyone in the arts is battling those funding cuts and those... I'm sure you have some perspectives to share on that.
Yeah, I'm thinking it actually might be my next book. I started with COVID writing books too. The music industry, such as it is really in crisis. It's an emergency, I think. It's not sustainable, and it mirrors what's happening in our society in general, because if I grumble to people and say, gee, yeah, it's really tough these days, this business, they'll say, well, what about Taylor Swift?
Oh.
Right? So it's the 1%.
Yeah.
They see the 1%, just like we see the Elon Musks and the Jeff Bezos is making their billions of dollars and go, oh, everything must be pretty good then. Maybe that'll trickle down to us. But there's no trickle-down theory in life or in the music business. And I'm not sure something's, I was going to say something's got to give, but it already has. It's so unsustainable that I see a whole generation of artists not making a living at it. And I think there's a radical shift, a societal shift that we need, where we've come to not value our artists. We expect that what artists are offering, you should be able to get for free. And I used to be a real fan of, you know, the commons, as they would call it. Okay, let's defund everything, and yet you still want to eat. And it breaks my heart to see a younger generation of especially musicians who they're working a day job in a brewery or a car wash so that they can afford to make their music in the evening. But after a while, you know, you come home from a day in the brewery and you're tired. So so then you switch. You're not as focused on that anymore. And yeah, it's really, really bad. And I still don't understand how there's a generation that does not get that the negative impact on making streaming your only source of listening to music. Too, right? But they do. So I used to bitch to my audiences and say, here, buy my CD. Don't go to Spotify. But they'd go, well, screw you, James. So now I'm going, if that's how you want to listen to your music, go ahead, as long as you understand that that does not support the artists. And few people do. Who would even imagine that a big promotional machinery would be evil enough to pay 0.003 cents in a royalty for a stream of your music?
Like, there was a article, I believe it was the Spotify CEO who had made a comment to do with basically saying that it doesn't take a lot of resources to make music or something.
Yeah, I think he said, what's the big deal? It doesn't cost hardly anything to make music. Like, so he was justifying robbing people, really. But pardon me, he's wrong. Even in that, I still, but not as much as I used to, some of my livelihood was as a record producer. And the first question now, unfortunately for any artist, is an economic one. Do you want to invest $20,000 into an album if no one is going to pay for it? So what do they do? Maybe you make a $5,000 album, and you can tell it sounds like a $5,000 album. So everything sort of gets to a lower level. People get put out of work. The last thing you could afford is a record producer if you're, but you can. That Spotify guy is correct. You one mic and a preamp and some software, and you can make a record. But if you want to keep up the quality, if you want to find ways that artists can feel a sense of well-being so that they can spend their time creating, the system's got to change. And it was built that way.
Well, and as you mentioned earlier, you know, folk music, roots music as well. I mean, that's got to find audiences in different ways as well. I mean, you know, it's, you know, reaching that audience, I mean, it's not getting pumped out, you know, over traditional media.
In fact, I used to, well, I had two regular gigs on CBC Radio as sort of a songwriter in residence. But the kind of music I make, you could see it on television, you could hear it on the radio. And with the extra corporatization, there's, I think what you call a top 40 station now is like a top 12 station. Like they just keep rotating.
And everything's very consolidated and programmed homogenous way across the country.
Oh,
right?
For sure.
Yeah. So really all you have left to hear anything other than that is a campus radio station like CFRU and maybe some CBC programming.
Yeah.
That's about
it. Community radio could be our savior. Mm-hmm. I'm grateful for what you're doing. Commercial radio is a joke. If I'm on tour, I've spent years in this business where the pattern would be a tour, okay, you check into the local radio stations, do a little promo. There's no point doing that because they literally will not play your music. A lot of these stations are programmed like in Chicago or something.
Exactly. And there's no local connection anymore.
That's right.
Absolutely none.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lucky if you even have anyone in the building.
Yeah, well, for sure.
All right, so let's talk a bit about some of the present activities you're involved with. I know you've published a couple of books.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a bit about some of those books. I understand there's music that's tied to the books and kind of chronicling your journey.
Yeah, both my recent books, one's a novel and one is sort of just a collection of road stories. They have a little technological idiosyncrasy that they have QR codes in them, and in the novel, if you put your phone on the QR code, it pulls up 36 songs that follow the plot, and the book happens to be about a band touring the country, so the music is a natural connection. And then in the road stories book, the QR code leads you to I've been on the road forever, so I write songs about the road. So I've got those collection too. So that was kind of fun. But really, it's just trying different canvases to different ways to get your work out there, and they were fun to do. I'm going to do more of it. And relating to something we were just talking about, it's really helped me tour as an artist because nobody wants to buy your merch anymore, a CD, but they'll buy the books. Even though you can get the books as downloads too, I think there's still a cachet that goes, and I'm delighted to see that people still want to hold a book in their hands, which is pretty nice.
So a theme I'm sensing is when you're in the arts, or advocating for a cause, you have to almost diversify how you get your message out there.
For sure, yeah.
Yeah.
You have to diversify your message, but you also, the way you're delivering the message, but also just to be viable financially as an artist, you have to have your fingers in a lot more pies than you used to, I think, because it's so variable. You used to be, for music, you could make a living not going on the road, just putting out albums and people would buy the albums.
Or being a songwriter,
yeah,
in a sense.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or you could do it just as a touring artist, slogging it out night after night. Right now, it's up in the air. Am I touring to support this album, or am I putting this album out to support my touring? Because neither one of them is adding up, right?
And in a way, it's like if you're an artist, you're also an activist because you're advocating just to...
Well, in fact, this discussion is making me realize that I'm a lifelong activist too, but I'm a music business activist now. Like I'm advocating for the rights of musicians and for learning ways that creatives in this country can keep doing their work. So that's his own form of activism.
And you've also run Praise the Ward, a festival that runs every fall. Tell me a little bit more about the thinking behind that.
It's coming up this September 21st, and I live in the ward and noticed, I've only been there 6 or 7 years, I guess now, but how many artists there are, and there's a reason for that. It used to be a little bit affordable. But because artists moved there, there's a great community that nurtures each other and supports. So I wanted to showcase that and find ways that the rest of the city could appreciate it. So it's almost an activist gesture in itself to say, okay, We've helped to create a community here that's strong in Guelph of arts. Let's find ways that people can support it and appreciate it and help to enhance that sense of community. My biggest thrill was that a lot of the artists sort of discovered each other and discovered that there is power in numbers, and we can nurture each other that way. And I actually had a call from a real estate agent after last year's festival who said, "I'm getting these calls, James. I think you put up the value of properties in the ward because people think it's such a cool place now." So sorry. Yeah.
I also want to talk a little bit about the Hillside Festival.
Yeah.
As I understand, you were the first artistic director.
That's correct, yeah.
In terms of its vision in music, and of course it now extends beyond music.
Sure.
You have various... but I also understand some of the core principles of it were environmental sustainability.
Yes, for sure. And it was a really early adopter to that, and a real sense of pride with our own Hillside community to see that spread to other festivals, but it took a while. We just, right from the get-go, said, okay, let's be a model for environmental sustainability too. One of my biggest career thrills was being invited, I think it was sponsored by the RIM people in Waterloo, mm-hmm. but they had a think tank. They invited me to be part of it, and they had a whole session on how can we make the rest of our year like the Hillside Festival, which I thought, okay, well, that's cool. And how can we? And actually that kind of ended up in my novel too. There's a festival mentioned in the novel that echoes that. So yeah, we were looking to be sustainable, but we were also, I was very impressed early on with the amount of, especially musical activity that went on in this city. We have a lot of musicians and very few venues. So again, that was an effort to showcase, but also to demonstrate that I firmly believe, and you can see at every Hillside, that our local artists can hold their own against international artists too. So it gives us a bigger appreciation of the value, and it enables us to support us more. But the international artists that have always been brought in, Sam does a great job of that now, opens our eyes to experiences that we mightn't get otherwise. So it just expands our community in positive ways.
Excellent. And your latest album is Wrinkles and Scars.
Mm-hmm.
And Wild Wind Blows is the first song on it. Now, is that referencing the wildfires summer of 2023?
Yes. In fact, I was on tour out west when the sky was black. Everyone was scared. It was very ominous. And as an activist, you might be the same. I thought, this sounds perverse, but I said, good, people will finally get it. They'll see, because it was dark here in Ontario from fires 1,000 miles away, right? So people will finally get that we have to take some action now. But the song was written, there's actually a line in the song about we're still, you know, the sand is smoldering with fire, but we're still keeping our heads in the sand, largely in denial. There's, you know, Alberta is the worst example. They recently released a statement for their wildfire season saying, well, boy, there's sure been an increase in campers leaving their cigarettes behind. And you just have to think of anything except the impact of the lifestyle that Alberta wants to lead, right?
All right. Well, James, thank you for coming in, sharing some perspective, sharing your stories today.
All right.
Thanks for listening to Radio Purg on CFRU 93.3 FM. I'm Kareem Mosna, a People's History Project researcher with OPURG Guelph. The conversation you just heard is part of a series exploring perspectives and documenting stories looking at the role of local music in broader social and environmental justice movements. To learn more about the People's History Project, please visit opurguelph.org.
The wild wind blows through the valley. The fire grows
goes by the day. It's time to go. Come on, Sally. That fatal glow is coming our way. Seven generations now on this family farm. Somehow we made it through floods and drought. We made it through the Dust Bowl and we managed to bounce back again when the bankers tried to close us out. The wild wind blows through the valley. The fire grows by the day. It's time to go. Feel that heat, it's closing in, close enough to scratch your skin. Sal, it's time to set the horses free. You think that all that thick black smoke would wake up all the anti-woke, but they stay too blind to see. The wild wind blows through the valley. The fire grows. Go, come on, Sally. That fatal glow, it's coming our way. While the earth is black, the sky is red, most of us still keep our heads in the smoldering sand. When the haze blocks out the sun, Sal, it's time for us to run. Where can we go in this troubled land? Wind blows through the valley. Fire grows by the day. It's time to go. Come on, Sally. That fatal glow is coming our way.